I just wanted to ask you about your feelings about the quota system in South Africa and how it's developed, and whether in your view it's getting the objective that they want to achieve.
I certainly think it's getting there. I think initially when they implemented the whole transformation quota system, it put players in place that weren't developed enough to be playing at that level. There's always been exceptions to the rule. You think of a guy called Brayton Paulser, which was a fantastic talent that played at that level. And it's only really until they looked at transforming it from the bottom upwards, so implementing transformation targets at school level, where we are now, where there's a much broader pool of players that are there on merit. You look at these guys coming through, all these players coming through now, there's hardly anyone in that. I don't think they're all there on merit. So I think it's spreading the passion for rugby to a wider base of the population. That's the most important part, and that is and has happened. You look at rugby at all levels in South Africa now, it's enjoyed by a bigger part of the population than in the past. So for me, that can only be a benefit for Springbok rugby. Yes, there's still a lot of way to go in terms of development, but it's sort of reached that tipping point where it's the momentum that's been gained now is phenomenal. So young players coming through, you look at that, look at Damien Willemse, the number 10, that 10-15 that's coming through now as a young player, phenomenally talented, and has been through all the age grades, has been one of the standout players in South Africa. So I've got no doubt that they're on the right track now, and we can only see this grow. I think the initial several years, I don't think it was implemented in the correct way. I know I certainly was affected by it at an SA under 21 level, at Springbok level. But where they are now, it's certainly definitely on the right track.
Because the players need to respect it, don't they?
No, I think and you look at the generation of players coming through now. They've played together from a young age at school. It's having access to the correct schools that are strong rugby schools that develop rugby on a broader basis. And there's certainly no more animosity or any lack of respect for any player coming through now. Where that was one of those tricky points earlier on when they introduced the whole system.
Is there anything else, Chris? I think we've had a very interesting and enlightening.
No, it's fantastic. Thank you very much.
For deeming
me worthy of a heritage.
Right. Well, as Chris suggested, I think many of the Gloucester Shed people would have felt very unhappy when you had to go. I mean, it was.
It was.
You were one of our.
No, thanks.
One of our favourites at the time.
No, thank you. I mean, I was very disappointed when it happened, and I had to spend long hours working internally at this all up. But I understand where the club was in the sense of, the commercial side of it. It is a business at the end of the day, and that's one of those things that's changed through the amateur ethos. It's a business that's got to be run as a business. And when I got my head around that, it's a bit easier. But it certainly was.
Do you have a view about ring fencing?
Do I have a view about ring fencing? I've got two views on ring fencing. having played at Worcester, if it was a ring-fenced competition, they would not have been able to play at that level. However, I think there's a very small amount of teams from the lower levels now these days that can actually make that jump. You know, London Irish, you know, it's fantastic that Bristol's finally made it back up, but London Irish has gone down. And if you look anything lower than London Irish, I don't think there's really anything there that could support, financially support that next step up. Ring fencing will bring a lot more certainty and security to teams. I think it will certainly affect the way the game is being played.
Right.
I know it's a big money spinner, the, you know, the relegation battle and having those games on television, but I think it will allow a bit more freedom to play. It's also very difficult for the club coming up to do any you know, recruitment, because by the time they are assured of going up, you know, the recruitment window is done. You know, if you haven't signed your team by January, you know, you're not going to have an opportunity. These guys normally only February, March, sometimes April time know that they're the team that's going up. But you look at the, you know, your Bristols, your London Irish now, they're walking that competition. So why not ring fence it for a couple of years and see how it is. And that will probably settle the lower league. I firmly believe, you know, I don't think the economy doesn't allow for 2, 3, or 4 financial leagues. So, you know, Premiership is fully professional. Championship is split, really. You know, there's a lot of teams playing professional, but a lot of the lower teams is semi-professional. Mm-hmm. National one, there's too much of a disparity there between teams that can afford and teams that can't afford. Mm-hmm. So for me, anything below than Championship, there shouldn't be any money involved. You know, rather spend your finances that you have in terms of developing your infrastructure and spend that on the development of your junior team coming through. I mean, certainly some of the places we went to in Stourbridge, and you look at the facilities and you go, God, you can fully understand that they are spending £3,000-£4,000 a week on the playing department, on the team, but there's nothing being spent, you know, on the facilities, or on the junior structure. So personally, I think, yes, you've got to keep some sort of promotion relegation, but if you really want to move up that level, you've got to showcase that through developing your younger players and, you know, and building a team through that system, rather than going to poach players that are 10, 15, 20 miles from you and bringing them to your club. Because, you know, what I found is with travelling rugby players, they'll play and then after the game they hang around in the bar maybe or in the clubhouse for an hour and then they shoot back home because they got a half an hour, 40 minute, hour drive, even more to get back home. They don't stay, they don't contribute back into the community. So I think that model, there's got to be a different model that's found between club, grassroots club rugby, if we call it that, and professional rugby. You know, and I think that's where there's still got to be a strict line being drawn.
I take your point about most of the teams that come up never make it, and never look like they're going to retain their place, apart from Exeter. The one example of a team that's come up and we all know has been so successful.
Yeah, but if you look at Exeter, they're an outlier. You know, they're an anomaly, because you look at where geographically where they are. What other Premiership rugby clubs are there in an hour and a half, 2 hour distance? No one. You know, they're the gateway to Devon and Cornwall, which has got rich traditional rugby heritage there. So there's a massive pool of players that they draw that come to Exeter and, you know, and the surrounding area. You look at anything around the traditional Premiership heartland. If you look anything, you know, if you have Bath, Bristol, Gloucester, Worcester, Wasps, Leicester, Northampton, London Irish, you know, that's that M4 corridor. It is difficult to attract, to retain, and to recruit. Where Exeter has got all the far southwest businesses, all the far southwest player developing players right there. So they can still draw on all of that. Over here, you know, Gloucester, Worcester, Bristol, Bath, you know, a lot of the companies you target for your sponsors, a lot of the players, a lot of the schools, you know, it's in such close proximity.
It's interesting, it's
a much, much bigger competitive environment than down there.
To sustain the modern Premiership side, you need sponsors and you've got to have access to
exactly.
It's an interesting thought.
It is different. So you know, if you look at another geographically another area, Bournemouth, you know, could also become you know, one of those sort of environments, because it's, you know, they can draw the developing players instead of them, you know, going off to other avenues. You know, you got Hartbury here and Gloucester, which is a strong rugby university, so that brings in.
Although it's interesting that Hartbury are struggling in rugby terms at the moment.
Well, Championship is a different level. You know, they'll always have, you know, now you come to that model where do you pay the players? You know, some of the players are being played, some of the guys are university students, some of the guys are academy players. So it's a different financing model again. But they need that so that at the lower bucks level, you know, at that younger student level, you can attract, because now you would rather go to Hartbury because there's potentially an opportunity. So in terms of their recruitment and drawing, you know, paying students, it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's good. It's very interesting.
No, I mean,
it's finished, Chris. I think that's really interesting.
Thank you, Tina. It's very much been fascinating, quite honestly.
Any time.